Blow the horn. Go.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the same place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Rosen! I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hi. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast with Tom and Dave. We're here today breaking down the latest installment of a truly classic football rivalry. Of course, I'm talking about Penn State versus Alabama. And if there has ever been two programs who respect and appreciate each other more than these two, heck, we even dress alike, then I don't know who they are. Tom, I felt honored to host Joe Paterno and his Pride of Nittany Lions in the Tajma football that is the newly expanded Bryant-Denny, but not so much that I wasn't pleased with the Tide's 24-3 victory. What stood out to you in Saturday's contest? Hey, and you know how we roll around here. I don't want headlines. I want the finer points, the points your mother would have missed watching the ball game.
I think I want to start with the offense and focus on the maturity or the lack thereof that is evident right now in this year's ball club. You know, I want to start with winning the time of possession. You know, we did not accomplish that. We only accomplished it in the first quarter tonight. And that came, you know, from a 9-play, 97-yard drive after that interception deep in their territory. And so we've got to be able to consistently convert on third down and put drives together. We only had 3 chances in the red zone. Yes, that's, you know, we scored 24 points, but imagine if we would have had just 5 or 6 chances in the red zone in total, you know, what the outcome of the game could have been.
Another trait of last year's team was not shooting yourself in the foot. While Penn State was only 1 penalty for 5 yards, we had 5 for 33. 3 of those penalties came from one of our new offensive line starters, Chance Warmack. Yes, he's going to be he's a highly touted player just like DJ Fluker, but he accounted for 3 of those penalties, and a key illegal procedure penalty happened, you know, in the second quarter on 3rd and goal. That suddenly forced us into a 3rd and goal from the 13-yard line and in essence took us out of going up 21-0. Also get the good with the bad when it comes to, you know, the youth of this offense. Early in that game, whenever we strung those plays together and got Kevin Norwood going into the end zone, what does he do? He does a somersault. And while he's excited and he's so happy for his first touchdown, you know, he comes to the sideline, and for those people watching it at home, you know, there was some colorful coaching from Coach Cignetti. You know, as soon as he comes to the sideline, he kind of got an earful from him and Coach Saban.
That's a big deal this season in particular. If we're flagged, or not just Alabama, but if teams are flagged for celebration in the end zone, they take the points off the board. They don't move the kick, the extra point, or they don't award it to the kickoff. They take the points off the board and assess the penalty there. So that is significant. That needs to be coached up.
Well, I'm surprised then, because that was our first score, and them taking that back would have been interesting to see how we responded.
And Big Ten officiating crew there too, right?
Yeah. And you know, one other thing that I think I want to mention too, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the offensive line for a second. You know, while Chance Warmack is young and he's still learning, you know, that holding penalty that they got in the first quarter, that's the first holding penalty that this offensive line has had in 46 quarters of football. And so, you know, from a stretch of 12 games last year, we got used to a very fundamentally sound Coach Pendry-coached offensive line that didn't make mistakes, didn't put us in a 2nd-and-12, 2nd-and-15, 2nd-and-20. And so this is something, too, that we have to watch, because this just kills drives.
You can't defeat yourself, right? You can't take aim at your own foot. And you mentioned it's been so long. I believe they said 46 quarters since we were called for a holding penalty.
Right.
I think the adage is you could call a holding on any play, but it has to be pretty egregious to draw the laundry. And to go that many ball games that length of time is quite impressive. It speaks to the seniors that we had on the line last year, and both of those seniors replaced by redshirt freshmen. We need some growing up to do. We can't have that type of penalty crush a drive. It was interesting. 2 of the 3 offensive line penalties on the very next play, we did score touchdowns, and so that was fortunate. But penalties in the red zone, penalties when you're driving, can really kill you.
Yes.
Well, I want to stick on the offensive side of the ball with my first observation, and you know, maybe it's a ray of sunshine compared to the doom and gloom that you've brought us kicking off today's podcast. Come on, man, we won the game, right? But I want to talk a little bit about multiples on offense. Very early in the game, the first 3-4 possessions of the ball game, we showed three very distinctive looks. On our very first possession, we went almost exclusively from the pistol formation. And in fact, I've seen a number of coaches interviewed, or I've read a couple articles. Some people debate the pistol as a offense, and some people debate it's a formation. I think it's something that we've seen the Alabama team run quite a lot the last couple of years, and basically what it is, it's a hybrid shotgun. The quarterback, instead of being a full 5, 6, 7 yards back taking the long snap, quarterback's not quite under center, probably splitting the difference 2-3 yards under center, a short snap, and then like an I formation, the running back is behind the quarterback. And so it's a very unique look, and you're starting to see it a lot more in college football. But anyways, in our first possession, we went almost exclusively from the pistol formations and had two tight ends flanking DJ Fluker on the right side. And nearly with every play coming out of that first possession resulted in a punt after moving the ball pretty well. But we had Trent running to the right. And so we came out power running team. We showed run, and we ran successfully very, very early on. In our second possession, we went to the complete other end of the spectrum. We went almost exclusively with a 5-wide, an empty backfield. And with Trent, actually, our star running back, lined up wide, not as a slot wide receiver, but wide out on the boundary, and he flipped sides, and so there was some multiple presentation there, and that drive ended up in that touchdown that, like you said, Norwood did his somersault touchdown, but you know, we got the 7 points for that. And then thereafter, sprinkled quite liberally in the third and fourth possession, we saw a lot of wildcat with Trent Richardson getting the snap and running the ball. McElroy was on the field as a wideout, and most of the times we ran that, we actually faked the end around to Julio. Just an interesting point, Julio had one carry last week against San Jose State, and it came from a handoff from Trent from the Wildcat. So I think that's pretty interesting. We're showing three very distinct flavors of offense this early in the season. I think it's a balance, it's a little bit art, it's a little bit science, with the coaching staff doing just enough, or doing enough to win a game against a brand-name opponent, a talented, well-coached opponent. Putting stuff on film is sort of the expression that I use, but putting stuff on film that your future opponents have to respect and have to prepare for, and then showing too much. You don't want to show too much. And I think this offensive staff, I think this coaching staff strikes a very good balance. You and I have seen teams before where by week 4 or week 5, we've pretty much seen what they've got. We don't see many fresh plays, and we start trying to call some of the plays from the stands. We haven't had that quite success with this staff. They hold things back, and they have new wrinkles. And an example, it's kind of been branded as the oh shit play, but in the SEC championship game against Florida, the entire offense goes to the right. McElroy plants his foot in the ground and throws over everyone to Colin Peake for just a breakaway touchdown, makes the cover of Sports Illustrated. You know, we still have more tricks in the bag, and that's going to be interesting as this offense, as this team evolves. We do have some maturity, we do have to grow up, but it looks like that we are capable of doing a lot with the ball.
We are, but from my doom and gloom perspective, Joe Paterno teams are well-coached teams, and they're not going to give up, and they're going to keep fighting. Because of the missed opportunities and the turnovers by Penn State early in this game, I feel like we could have put them away a lot sooner. And so going into halftime up 17-0 does not feel the same way going up into halftime 30-0, 31-0.
I think there's room for us both to be right. We put up 17 points in the first half. And only mustered 7 in the entirety of the second half. If you look at the yard differential, we had 288 yards in the first half and about 120 in the second half. We were a little different team offensively, and so I think there's room to be right. Offensively, we could have been more productive. We could have kept our foot on the throat. We could have played like there was no scoreboard. Saban on the radio, the interview with Barry Krause going into half was very clear. You know, from his days at Michigan State, took a team with a big lead, many more points than our 17, a big lead into half, and Paterno coach team came back to win in the second half. And he was very clear, we're coming out in the second half to play like there's no scoreboard. I didn't see us play like there was no scoreboard.
No.
At the same time, though, we came out and we did show a lot on offense, and we showed it because we could show it. Every element that we did show, we were successful moving the ball. I think we tweaked some finer points. We take aim at something other than our foot, and we can put up a lot of points, and it'll be fun to watch this offense evolve.
No, it will be. You know, going to the other side of the ball, I want to spend a few minutes talking about the maturity of the defense. You know, also reminiscent of last year's national championship team was the ability to get off the field on three and outs and get their, you know, get the ball back to the offense. And, you know, we were facing a team with a true freshman quarterback, the first true freshman quarterback on a Joe Paterno coach team in 45 years, his second ball game in front of 102,000 rabid Alabama fans. They were able to put drives together between the 20s on a consistent basis. This is a team that had 283 yards of total offense from a freshman quarterback. So that's something I was a little bit, you know, upset about. And had they not had those miscues in the red zone, this would have been a different ball game. And so when we talked a minute ago about the offense, and I wish we would have put up more points, what if they would have had just a couple of those fumbles and interceptions not go our way, and suddenly we're sitting there at half in a 17-14 ball game? How would this team have come out in the second half if it was a three-point game?
Well, I think that's interesting. And you know, even if you go back to the national championship game, you know, we were stale in the second half, and especially there in the third quarter. We went into half thinking that we had the game won, that it was over, forgetting that we had to come back and play the second half. And it wasn't as dramatic,
but it was like that
in this game. But we came out and there was no spark, and I think that's certainly true.
Yeah, and you know, another thing that we talked about at the beginning of the season was we were hoping that this year's team would be able to get consistent pass rush from the front four. We said our front seven is going to be the strength of this team, and we have got to give help to a young secondary. Suddenly, Marcel Darius out two games. Courtney Upshaw tweaks an ankle in game one, was only able to go two or three plays and couldn't go. So one of the things I was hoping to see was a Marcel Darius on the left, a Courtney Upshaw on the right, and Dante Hightower picking his poison in the center, and suddenly you're coming at the quarterback from those 3 points, we're going to get some sacks. Instead, we have 7, 8, 9, 10 guys tonight that rotated at the front seven, and we get zero sacks.
The pressure that we did get was forced. A couple of times we did a corner blitz. A couple of times we did safety blitzes. We had to manufacture the pressure that we got. Getting Darius back, and I'm not putting it all on his shoulders because it's not that he's the Superman, although he may well be, but the fact that he comes in and he draws the protection package everywhere he lines up, you have to know where he lines up. Certainly he can overcome a double team, but if you double team him, then that frees up the guy on the other side. Without that attention grabber, it's hard for the rest of the defense to get the pressure.
No, that's true. And something else we haven't talked about that I just thought about was, you know, one of the things that Cody brought to this defense last year on first and second down was the ability to collapse the pocket. So even if a quarterback was going to end up passing on an obvious running down, so Cody was still in the game, his ability to push the pocket back on the quarterback gave us some more options. And right now, between a Josh Chapman and a Kerry Murphy and some of the young guys, we do not have anybody pushing the pocket, which is collapsing the pocket,
yep,
and really taking the quarterback's options away. This freshman quarterback, to me, did not feel very rushed or hurried, and that just shouldn't be the case right now with this year's team.
He's feeling too comfortable in the pocket. We got to make the pocket an uncomfortable.
He showed way too much composure because we just didn't really make him uncomfortable at all. And, you know, to your point about defensive backs for a second, you know, this is a mixed bag too, just like the offense. Sure, we had some great sparks, some great plays by the DBs. You know, the thing I just want to touch on for a quick second is, you know, there was a key play after that crazy 80-yard fumble, I guess second and seven from like 2 or 3 yard line, and Robert Lester rushes from the outside on a blitz. He's got the guy in the backfield and just does this arm tackle. He spins away. He goes for 10 yards and a first down. There's Saban talking about getting off the field. Last year's team, it would have been a 3rd and 8, from the 3-yard line with a freshman quarterback. Now, that's kind of the position that I wanted this defense to be in last night.
No, I think that's a good point. And if you don't mind, I'm going to segue to my second point, which is the secondary. And you mentioned Robert Lester. The secondary is certainly a theme, and it's a theme for a reason. We're going to play some high-quality quarterbacks, not senior or not freshman quarterbacks. We're going to play some high-quality quarterbacks and some high-quality receivers as we get into the league play. And with the secondary going in, we knew that that was an inexperienced point. So I think it's a theme for a reason, and I don't mind revisiting it every week to see how we're tracking. And so here were some of my observations this week, and I'm just going to bullet point some of these out and jump in where you feel the need. But you know, last week we started three cornerbacks, and our primary cornerback, you think a right corner and a left corner, was Kirkpatrick and Daquan Menzie. This week, and we brought in DeMarcus Milliner as our nickel corner. Daquan and DeMarcus switched roles this week. Dre Kirkpatrick was still our starting cornerback, our number one, if you will. And DeMarcus Milliner, a true freshman, is now our number two corner. And it seemed that Daquan took the nickel corner role. Now, played most of the game. We played nickel a lot, so all three of them played. But they sort of switched roles and switched responsibilities. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Again, it's something we want to watch. The players that are out there, the reps that they get, it's something we want to watch. And so that was an adjustment that was made this week. Milliner went out at one point, and I watched on the sideline. Looked like they were wrapping up a hamstring, and I read a little bit today. Looks like it was just a minor pull of a hamstring. He's going to be okay. But when he went out, we brought in Phelan Jones, and we didn't move Daquan over and put Phelan in the nickel corner role, but we brought Phelan in to play that corner role. So that, again, just how we use the personnel is something to watch. I don't think we would have played a fourth cornerback had Milliner not been able to play. And then, you know, our last week we played six, and so B.J. Scott and a John Fulton didn't play. So the use of personnel there was interesting.
You know, one thing that I think that speaks to that is that Daquan is a JUCO, you know, former JUCO, and that he has been in the college game a little bit. And, you know, last year, if you think about it, who was playing our nickel? It was Javi, okay? A Marquise Johnson was outside, and a Kareem was outside, and Javi's inside. And why is that? Because, you know, they are having to guard the faster slot receiver, but also they got the responsibilities of the blitzing of the quarterback. And so we'll have to see if that speaks to Menzie having more of a complete game right now versus Milner. Okay, your job is to go out there and just play this one receiver. I'm not going to fill your head with going after the quarterback and doing a delayed stunt and all this kind of stuff.
I did notice also, just in terms of our player usage, we played a lot of nickel, so we played a lot of five DBs. But when we went to a dime package, and so we brought in a sixth DB, last week when we went to a dime, we played four cornerbacks almost exclusively with two safeties. We bumped that, we switched that a little bit this week and played three cornerbacks and three safeties with Will Lowry, a walk-on, former walk-on, manning that spot. And so, again, that it could have more to do with the competition and what we're expecting them to do, a stronger running game, so we bring in an extra safety. But that was just an interesting personnel usage. And I know that you mentioned Robert Lester and missing a play, and that's certainly fair to call him out for that. But I'm going to tell you, I think Robert Lester is going to be a star. He had a pick in this game. That's two games in a row. He had the fumble recovery on that sort of wacky play where they end up with the ball, but you know, losing 88 yards. He just has a head. It seems just has a head for the ball, the head for the big play. He's going to be a star in the secondary. We're watching him grow up in front of us. Tommy, it's that time again. We're awarding game balls. Who gets your mini game ball?
My mini game ball, I think I have to give it to Trent Richardson.
No, can't do that, man. Trent Richardson's on the front page of every newspaper in the state of Alabama. You can't give him a mini game ball. He's got the real thing. Who's getting your mini game ball?
Well, I had to mention him for a second because, you know, with Ingram being out, Heisman Trophy winner, you know, for Richardson, we know what the guy brings to the table. But I still think it's pretty impressive that he accounted for 200 yards of total offense on his own, especially in that first and second quarter. I think he kind of carried the team.
Trent's a full-grown man.
He is. He, like we talked about before, we've got two SEC starting running backs on the same football team. I guess the other game ball, which is not someone that's going to jump out at you, to me would have to be Mark Ingram. And so, you know, I know, yes, he didn't play in the game. But what was key to me about Mark Ingram, and this is just the character of Nick Saban football teams. Nick Saban is all about the team first. Okay, you know, last week when Trent Richardson was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, you know, he said something like, well, that's just a cover. He said, I'm sure my mom will be happy about it, okay, but we just have another game to play. That's just one game. He said something like, when I get older, I'll think that's a great thing. What does Ingram do? You know, after Preston Dial maybe scores his first touchdown in Alabama football, you know, his Alabama football playing days, you know, who's the guy on the sideline right in front of Preston Dial just pumping him up? Mark Ingram. You know, later in the game, you know, Trent Richardson's coming to the sideline for something to get looked at. Mark Ingram's right over his shoulder digging grass out of his helmet. And, you know, and they're even kidding about, you know, he's been relegated to sitting here being an equipment guy. And I just think that, you know, he could be sitting here just sitting over on the sideline, taking it all in, checking out the fans, and he's into the game as much as a coach.
I think that's a great pick of a game ball, Mark Ingram there. He's a leader of this team, and he's demonstrating that. He could be sitting on the sidelines eating hot dogs, and not a person would say a word. But he's out there coaching the team up. I think that's an insightful pick. I like that. I was watching Mark and Trent interact before the game, and certainly we know now that the game plan called for a heavy run package, that Trent was, you know, potentially going to have a big day and be a difference maker. We didn't know that before the game. The players did, and Mark and Trent were just, you know, almost, you know, helmet to helmet or face to helmet, you know, having a very intense conversation. And you could tell that Mark was pumping him up and patting him on the head, on the helmet, and patting him on the shoulder pads, and really firing him up and really motivating him. And I tell you what else I saw as he was doing that. Mark was kind of bouncing up and down, jumping up and down a little bit, whooping it up with Trent. He looks fine to me. He plays next week.
You think so?
I think he does.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to award my mini game ball. I'm probably not as insightful as you are there with the Mark selection. I'm going to give my mini game ball to Will Lowry. Again, former walk-on, had a pick in the game. You know, you think a walk-on on a Nick Saban team, on a nationally number one ranked team, defending national champion. Don't let Nick Saban hear me say that. But, you know, we've had two number one recruiting classes under Coach Saban, a number three recruiting class. There's not room for a walk-on, except for there is when you're Will Lowry. He strikes me as the find a need, fill a need type players, much like an Eric Anders or a Corey Reamer last year. Players that we know that there's athletes on the team that have more talent, but in the moment of need, in the crucible of competition, there's not a player that's more capable to step in. And Will Lowry stepped in, played very well last night. I give him my mini game ball.
Well, I think that's a good pick. And, you know, the other thing I think that speaks to is him trusting Will Lowry because he is a junior, because he has been in the system. You know, he played for Hoover High School, a great high school football program in the state of Alabama. But he trusted him to be back there in that center field position, which is very important, over some more highly talented guys coming out like Nick Perry and Jarek Williams. I mean, these guys are going to be stars. But yet, what can we do? One of these guys, you know, might get redshirted this year and not have to, you know, blow a year of eligibility because a guy like Will Lowry can step up. And we know that while he's not the fastest guy out there, he's not going to be out of position.
He's not going to hit the home run, but he's going to get a base hit. He's not going to strike out in a critical situation. I think that's right on. He's been in the system for a little bit. And so, you know, that's where I say there's more talent. But in the moment, I don't think there's a player that's more capable. And so I think Will Lowry's a key player for the team at this point.
I agree.
Tommy, as we step back from this game, what is your takeaway?
Well, I mean, we are obviously a very talented team. And you can tell that we have a lot of guys who are going to be really good players. You know, the fact that guys like Nico Johnson, five-star, number one linebacker in the country last year or the year before, didn't even see the field in this game. Why? Because we've got so many other talented players ahead of him. But yet, we are still very inexperienced. And because we're so inexperienced, we are going to experience the ups and downs, the roller coaster, if you would, of the highs and lows. And so we're going to see a Dre Kirkpatrick that is going to blow an assignment and let a guy get over his head, and a Will Lowry saves the touchdown tackle. And then we're going to see him on another play jump a route that's not even his and break up a pass and almost get a pick. And so it's just going to be, it's like going to be pulling your hair out for the next few weeks. And hopefully this team can put this together, because Arkansas was looming on the horizon. And, you know, that's going to be a big test for the secondary. And so hopefully they can just grow up fast.
Got to grow up fast. My takeaway, and, you know, I guess it's boring, I'm not altogether dissimilar. Tommy, my overall takeaway, and I know we look at some of the metrics and we take the pulse and we look at some barometers, and maybe you wouldn't think that, you know, there's a 21-point differential. But you know what? There was. It was a 21-point differential. At no point in the ballgame did it look to be in question. And I think my takeaway is, we can play ugly, and we can win. We got two of our best players not on the field, with Mark Ingram and Marcel Darius, and then Courtney Upshaw injured and really not contributing. We can have three frontline starters not participate for practical purposes in this ballgame, and still the game's not in jeopardy. There's no threat. They're coming back, and potentially they're all going to be back next week. My takeaway is, gosh, we look good. I think we've got a good team. They're young pups, but boy, they can play. And as they mature, this team is going to get better and better and better.
Well, I think, as we talked about there, is, you know, last year Saban said, we have not seen this team play four quarters yet. And I don't know, some might argue it wasn't until the Florida game that we really put it all together last year for four quarters. And yes, it will be exciting when this team does this. But tonight, you know, we had 14 points in the first quarter, and yet we only scored 10 points the rest of the ball game. I just want to see them put the foot on the throat and put teams away, and as Saban says, take the will away. Just make these guys give up.
I guess the plus side is, if we have to wait until the Florida game to see that this year, we only have to wait a couple more weeks instead of a couple more months.
That's true.
All right, Tommy, flipping the calendar forward, we line up against the Duke Blue Devils this week. And before we get into your pronunciations, I'm going to give you a couple trivia questions. You can take them to the bar and win you a beer this week. You ready?
Okay.
All right. Hey, the stadium that we're going to play in is Wallace Wade Stadium. And the irony there, and Bama fans familiar with the name Wallace Wade, Coach Wade was a successful coach at the University of Alabama. And just to show you how much college football has changed, he left a successful career at the University of Alabama to take over the program at Duke. You don't see Nick Saban doing that anytime soon, do you?
No, I don't think so.
All right. So college football world has changed a little bit. We're going to be playing in a stadium that seats about 33,000, and it may have been since Wallace Wade was coach at Alabama that we played in a stadium that small. And just another point, that the Wallace Wade Stadium is the only stadium outside of Pasadena that's hosted a Rose Bowl.
Really?
So that's a little fun fact there.
Okay.
But you know what? None of that's going to help Duke on Saturday. And as I look at the contest, you know, I think that they may have a little bit of success. They may exploit some of the youth that we have. But I target this as a 44-14 type of ball game. I think that we get on them early, and it's not much of a contest. I will say that with this young team, I'm glad that going to Duke is our first road game. There's certainly more hostile places we could go.
No, that's true. This is a great place for our first game versus at Florida, at Arkansas, or something like that for this year's ball club. And, you know, David Cutcliffe has had a lot of success in the SEC. He is a great offensive-minded coach. He's had a lot of success, and Bama fans would know this with the likes of Peyton Manning in the past against us. He's caused a lot of fits, and he knows how to move the ball. And I think this will be a good test for the defense as they continue to grow up. I also think that Coach Saban is going to give this team grief all week long. The fact of what we talked about and the lack of consistency and letting the foot off the pedal, I think we are going to get after them. And I think we're going to show some intensity in the first half that we just kind of let fall by the wayside halfway through the second quarter. And, you know, I agree with you. I think it's going to be in the 40s, and probably I could even see in the high 40s. I could see this team giving up no more than 10 points. I could see a game of 48-10, something like that.
So we're going to watch the Tide roll this weekend.
Yes.
Very good. That wraps another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening, and roll tide. Thanks for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
All right.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
All right.
Email us at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
All right.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
All right.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate what we're playing against and make a difference.